Hello everyone and welcome to Green Minds Podcast. I'm Eva and I'm your host for this episode. This episode is special because it's the first episode of a new format we are calling Around the World. In this first of four Around the World episodes, we want to talk about three different countries and how they are dealing with climate change and the associated vulnerability and adaptation. I'm very happy to have three representatives from three different countries as guests today. Like me, all three representatives are students of the Master in Climate Change Management and Finance at Imperial and have agreed to tell us about climate change challenges and adaptation strategies in their countries. The three representatives represent a total of three countries from two continents with a combined population of almost 1.7 billion. My guests today are Valentina from Colombia, Pradyusha from India, and Huzafar from Pakistan. I'm very much looking forward to talking to the three of you, and I'm excited to hear your insights. Thank you so much for joining me and welcome to the first of the Around the World episodes of Green Minds. First of all, can I ask you all to give a quick introduction of yourself? And can you please tell me a bit about your favorite outdoor activities or outdoor places? So, Valentina, would you like to start?
Yes, of course. Hello, everyone. My name is Valentina Uribe. I was born in Bogota, Colombia. I studied economics and finance at the University of Bologna in Italy. And my favorite outdoor place, I think, is the top of a hill in the Colombian Andes Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. Thanks for introducing yourself. Let's move on to Pradyusha. Would you like to continue and tell us who you are and what's your favorite outdoor place or activity?
Sure, thanks, Eva. Hi, everyone. I'm Pradyusha Ravi. And coming from India, I've had the chance to experience the rich culture and diverse landscape across a few different states in India. And my background is in electrical engineering, but for the past few years, I've been working in management consulting with a focus on ESG and sustainability. As for my favorite outdoor activity, I love cycling, especially very early in the morning. I think it's a fantastic way to start my day, stay active, and also enjoy some quality time with friends.
Great, thank you. What does early in the morning mean for you?
I think 5 a.m. Yeah.
Okay. That's early. Huzafar, would you like to continue?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having us, Eva. So I'm Huzafar. I'm from Pakistan, lived there my whole life. And then for my bachelor's studies, I went to the US where I focused on international development at Hamilton College. After that, I was working for a bit in Pakistan in tech consulting. And that's where in the summer of 2022, Pakistan had these really, really horrific floods. Which brought climate change to the forefront for me. And so that's when I decided to pursue this program. So here I am now on this program with you all. In terms of my favorite outdoor activity, like Pradyusha, I like cycling a lot. I've been trying to incorporate it more and more into my London commutes. And my favorite place so far to cycle in London has been Hyde Park.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. I'd now start and talk a bit about each country, and I'd like to start with Colombia. I did a bit of research and I know that Colombia is not a major carbon emitter, so the total CO2 emissions of Colombia in 2022 were around 140 million metric tons of CO2 emissions, and with a total population of almost 52 million. But however, Colombia is particularly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. Before we dive deeper into these topics and the adaptation strategies of the country, Valentina, could you please tell us a bit more about Colombia and what characterizes this country, and maybe also tell us a bit about the main potentials and challenges of Colombia in terms of climate change and adaptation?
Yes, so Colombia is a developing nation, so we don't have a lot of manufacturing. I think our main activities are the extraction of petroleum and coal, which poses a challenge because it's our main source of income. However, I think what characterizes Colombia is its diversity. I think there is a statistic that we hold about 10% of the world's diversity within our country. We have a diverse range of ecosystems because of the different heights of the mountains. We have páramos, mangroves, wetlands, coral reefs, glaciers, the tropical forest, the Amazon. So I think one of the main characteristics is the significant biodiversity and also really important, the water resources. Because of these characteristics, we are particularly vulnerable to flooding when there is La Niña years. So most of the population lives in the highland areas or on the coast sides. So we are particularly vulnerable as well to sea level rise. I think one of the most concerns at the present is that the glaciers are melting, and that creates water shortages when we have El Niño years. And that's really disrupting the water cycle.
Thank you so much for all these insights. And what would you say, what's the most significant challenge in terms of climate change? Or isn't it possible to say what's the most significant challenge? So you talked about floods and also the rising sea levels, but also the difficulties for the biodiversity and extinction of species. What would you say, what's the most significant challenge for Colombia?
I think at the present would be flooding when there is La Niña and droughts when there is El Niño, because of the intensity. That's, I think, the most pressing issue. But as a world level impact, if we lose the biodiversity we have, it will be very disruptive in the future years.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we come to adaptation strategies of Colombia, I would now like to go to India. And before I ask Pratyusha about India as a country and its adaptation strategies, I want to introduce India. And what I know, India is currently the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases globally, with around 2.86 billion metric tons of CO2 emissions in 2022, and a population of around 1.4 billion. It is expected to become the world's most populous country by 2030. So many, many people live in India. And Pratyusha, would you, as the representative for India, please give us an overview of India as a country and also tell us a bit about the problems and opportunities India as a country has regarding changing climate and the needs for adapting to rising temperatures?
Sure. Yes, India is a vast country with a large and growing population. And we did recently surpass China as the world's most populous country. But I think it's very important to understand our emissions context. Our total CO2 emissions are quite significant at 2.86 billion metric tons, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But our per capita emissions is only 2 tons, which is much lower than the global average of 5 tons. I think this reflects our developing status and the focus on basic needs like electricity. The country has made huge strides in improving energy access during the past 2 decades, with near universal household access achieved just in 2019, meaning that over 900 million citizens have gained an electrical connection in their house in less than 2 decades. I think the challenge now is to continue to develop this energy network and also diversify the fuel mix to meet this growing demand. I think this situation in India presents an opportunity to take bold action and putting it on the path to realize strong and equitable growth while also averting the effects of changing climate. And if we move on to the challenges, I believe that we are already experiencing the worst effects of climate change in terms of intense rainfall and floods, which are impacting millions of people. And just in terms of some numbers, over 75% of our districts are classified as hotspots for extreme weather events. And these are projected to worsen with rising temperatures. And as you can expect, climate-related disasters cause billions of dollars in damages every year. And since India is trying to focus more on renewable energy transition, land scarcity could also become an issue. But I think it's also very important to ensure a just transition while minimizing economic disruptions and also ensuring social equity. I think these are some of the challenges in this space. And I think in terms of opportunities, I believe India is very strongly committed to tackling climate change. And in COP26, we pledged a net zero target by 2070, and there are very exciting opportunities in this transition. Firstly, I think it's the renewable energy expansion. We're very heavily investing in solar and wind power to reduce the reliance on fossil fuels and enhance energy security. And India recently also co-founded the International Solar Alliance with France to promote global solar power even globally. And next, I think in terms of green technologies, we are embracing green hydrogen in EV production and exploring different ways to reduce material waste and capture carbon emissions across different sectors. And finally, in terms of policy, India is also preparing to launch its emissions trading scheme, which will be very crucial to encourage low carbon practices. I think in terms of, you know, the given sheer size and the diversity of India, any successful models that India develops can be replicated in other economies, which would potentially produce a beneficial effect on billions of people across the world. So I believe India's ongoing development presents a very unique opportunity to address some of these challenges related to climate change, not just domestically, but also internationally.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting and sounds like India is on a good way to tackle climate change. What would you say, to summarize, what is the most significant challenge for India? Like Valentina said, for Colombia, floods are the most significant challenge. Is there anything you can specify for India, or is it difficult to say because India is such a big country with various diverse landscapes and therefore hard to specify? What would you say?
I would definitely say floods and droughts. I also say droughts because India heavily relies on seasonal monsoons, which half of it its agriculture relies on, right? So I would say that's also something which could affect the food security of the country as well.
Okay, thank you very much. And now last but not least, Huzefa, it's your part. Would you like to tell us a bit about your country and what characterizes Pakistan and what challenges and adaptation strategies Pakistan maybe already has implemented?
Yeah, of course, Eva. So Pakistan has the world's fifth largest population. We're at about 220 million people at the moment. And if you look at climate vulnerability, the Global Climate Risk Index put Pakistan in its top 10 climate vulnerable countries. At the same time, just like India and like many developing countries, Pakistan has a very low per capita emissions of roughly 2.4 tons per person. And so if we look at Pakistan and if we look at Pakistan's economy, which has been struggling in recent years, the government is very much fiscally constrained. And so there's limited funding for climate mitigation and adaptation. And I'd like to share a bit about the two major challenges that Pakistan has been facing in recent years. The first one are the floods that Pakistan faced in 2022. And these were caused by the record monsoon rains and the melting glaciers. And just to give you a sense of the scale of the tragedy, so the UN Secretary General, when he visited those areas, he termed them in very strong words as climate carnage. And if we look at the damages because of these floods, so the Ministry of Planning and Development estimated that the total damages were about $30 billion, and that this was going to affect about 2.2% of the GDP. And so just staying on the theme of floods, I wanted to comment on the long-term impacts of such disasters on the resilience of the financial system for country. So Pakistan has been regularly facing floods because of monsoon. The ones in 2022 were the most damaging, but we also had floods in 2010. And so some academics conducted a study on the lending patterns of banks after those floods. And they found that because of the floods, they faced an increase in their funding costs. So banks started to reduce credit to borrowers with little education, little credit history, and seasonal occupations. And then their credit reduction was not compensated by lending more in regions where the floods hadn't impacted so much. So what does this do to the financial stability of a country and to people needing access to capital to set up businesses or for personal needs? The second challenge I wanted to talk about is the rising temperatures, and then more and more we're seeing long heat waves throughout the summers. So there's a city in Sindh called Jaipurabad, which it often features as one of the hottest cities on earth on many days over the summer. And so the temperatures soar regularly to 49 degrees Celsius. So I think something like that is unimaginable in London, but that's happening in Jaipurabad. And so workers faint regularly because of the heat, and heat exhaustion and heat stroke are a daily obstacle for many of the city's largely poor residents. And of course, alongside the heat, there's also a crisis of water scarcity in that city. And then there are power outages that last sometimes up to 12 hours a day. So they don't have access to air conditioning during some of those warmest hours of the day. And so just in 2022, there was a very, very long heat wave that lasted for 11 weeks, where the average temperatures throughout stayed at 47 degrees. And so that presents its own health challenges, but also its challenges for productivity and for workers earning incomes. And so these two challenges in a very major way signify for me Pakistan's vulnerability to climate change.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting and insightful. And I think all of the three countries we cover today face difficulties with floods and droughts. And now in the second part, I want to talk more about adaptation strategies and also the role that governments play in addressing climate change and tackling climate change. And I would go and start with Colombia. So Valentina, you mentioned that floods are the most significant challenge for Colombia and that the changing climate affects many people there. What would you say, are there already implemented effective strategies and adaptation plans? And what would you say, which sectors are at the forefront at implementing these strategies and which sectors lag behind?
Yes, of course. So I think the most impacted ones are both energy and agriculture because Colombia is heavily reliant on hydropower. So I think from the government, the main strategy is building up more reserves to hold the water when there is excess of water and also to store it when we have like droughts. So I think that's their main focus in terms of building infrastructure to be able to cope with like the different amounts of water. For agriculture, I think some of the adaptation plans have been like educating, so to try farmers to grow according to the rainfall patterns. Also for, because again, our geography is quite diverse and we have different altitudes in the mountains. For example, for coffee, which is one of our like flagging products, there has been tests to migrate towards higher altitudes for the coffee to grow in the normal temperatures that it should. And also trying to plant more resistant species of or varieties of plants to both floods and heat. And I think overall, yeah, the last three governments have played an important role in getting us as ready as we can to the challenges.
Okay, that sounds good. So you would say governance have a huge role in Colombia and promote sustainable practices in, for example, agriculture and also the energy sector. What would you say, how are local communities involved in climate change adaptation efforts, or how are people affected by these adaptation plans?
I think perhaps it's a big challenge in the rural areas because it is sometimes difficult that the government arrives to those very like rural distant areas. In the cities, people are very, very aware and they understand the challenges. However, we also have significant lobby from the petroleum and coal industries. So I guess in terms of local communities, I would say it's more like where there is companies working in rural areas that they like bring all these adaptation strategies and that include the people more than the government.
Okay, that's interesting. And I think one other topic we haven't covered so far or not in that depth is the role of forests. So I think Colombia is also rich in forests, and forests play a huge or important role in tackling climate change because of their capabilities to sequester carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Does Colombia have any goals relating to deforestation or afforestation, reforestation? Could you maybe explain a bit more about the current situation about that?
Yes. So we, because of like expanding agriculture mainly, there has been lots of land use change. However, Colombia, as part of its national determined contribution, its NDC, has a target to reduce to 0 acres per year of deforestation by 2030. So it is a major concern, especially for the Amazon rainforest, because we know the importance of keeping those ecosystems in terms of biodiversity and carbon sequestration.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Would you say that the goal of reaching zero deforestation by 2030 is realistic?
I think we will have to see. This year in particular, we had really intense wildfires during January, which took their toll, even just like on the mountains besides Bogota. The whole city was covered in a blanket of ashes for a whole week, which has been really difficult to deal with because it's not like man-made, but it's the result of our climate change and the intensity of El Niño phenomena. And mm-hmm. I think that's going to be like an increasing challenge as we approach the deadline to deliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. And maybe one other topic in terms of the energy mix of Colombia. What would you say, which energy or which renewable energy is the most important in the future for Colombia?
Well, at the present, we have between 60 to 80% hydro. However, due to the changing in patterns of rainfall, it's not something we will like continue to rely on, but there is a big push towards wind. So in the north of Colombia, there is potential geographically for like wind farms. So that's the second most promising.
Okay. Thank you very much for all the insights to Colombia. That was very interesting. And now I would like to hand over to Pradyusha. And I would like to ask you, does climate change play a role for the election? Because in India, there will be elections this year. And maybe you can tell me a bit about that and in general, the role of the governance for climate change.
Sure. Thanks, Eva. So I think climate change is not necessarily the dominant issue in the 2024 elections. I think traditional economic issues and social issues will probably take the center stage in the campaigns, but the consequences of climate change would still influence the voters. Like I mentioned earlier, India is a country that relies heavily on seasonal monsoons, with over half of its agriculture depending on rain. So I think extreme weather events like droughts and floods caused by climate change would directly threaten the food security and agricultural prices, not just in India, but potentially also for the global market. For instance, some of us might know that India banned rice exports due to heavy rains hitting the domestic crops and also the fear of shortage due to El Nino. So overall, like I mentioned, I don't think climate change itself would be the headline, but its impact on water, agriculture and daily life could become important factors in the elections.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very interesting. And in the first question, you also covered the topics of trading systems, which will be implemented in India. Are there any other specific policies or initiatives that promote maybe the use of clean energy or also the implementation of adaptation strategies regarding climate change?
Mm-hmm. So there is this one, it's also part of the NDC, I think the National Afforestation Program. The Colombia forest is also very important for the country's commitments. And India is planning to add an additional carbon sink of, I think, 3 tons of CO2 equivalent through forest and tree cover. I think this is very relevant because I believe a lot of local communities are also involved in afforestation and reforestation. So I think this would be one other important initiative by the government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And one other question I also have is, as we know that India's populations will rise and the economy will also grow, what would you say, how can India make sure that the energy security in the future is secured? And what is about the dependence on fossil fuel imports in this country? Is this a problem that India faces or what other challenges?
I think that's a really good question. India does rely heavily on fossil fuels, particularly coal accounts for 70% of the power generation. And even for transportation, there is heavy reliance on oil. And I think this does create a vulnerability in the energy security of the country. This dependence on imports also exposes the country to fluctuations in global prices and also supply disruptions. However, I think there is a growing focus on renewable energy technologies, like I mentioned, such as green hydrogen, EVs, waste-to-energy plants, and ethanol-blended petrol. I believe these advancements have a potential to reduce India's dependence on fossil fuel imports in the future, and potentially also strengthening the energy security of the country.
Mm-hmm. And as I asked Valentina about the most important renewable energy in the future of Colombia, what would you say, what's the most important renewable energy for India? Or are there many sources of energy that have to be implemented?
I think for India, I would definitely say solar and wind energy. India is expanding very rapidly on solar energy and wind energy in the recent few years, and especially to reduce reliance on fossil fuels and on this point, enhance in energy security as well. So I would say that is super relevant. Like I also mentioned earlier, we co-founded the International Solar Alliance to promote solar power globally as well. So yeah, I think this would be relevant for India.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you say about the awareness of the population, of people living in India about climate change and also about the needs for adapting to a changing climate? For example, how are major cities in India adapting to climate change in terms of, for example, infrastructure and urban planning?
I wouldn't say that climate change is the top priority for people in India. There are many other relevant issues like poverty and social issues, which would be a priority, at least in most of the rural areas. I wouldn't say that it's a top priority, but like I mentioned, it does impact people indirectly, especially in terms of prices of agricultural products or even in terms of, say, extreme weather events like floods and droughts. I think this is super relevant, and it's still going to be a focus for people, but I wouldn't say it's top priority right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what adaptation strategies does India have? As you said, floods are a very, very significant challenge for India. Are there any solutions that work or that are already successfully implemented?
Yeah. So I come from a city in the southern part of India, so I can talk a little bit about what the city is doing right now. We did face the impacts of heavy flooding, for example, in 2015, when we were cut out from the world, I think, for a week or a couple of weeks. So the city tried to do better urban planning. They also tried to improve the protection around the lakes and ensure that there wouldn't be overflooding in the lakes during monsoon seasons.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to Pakistan. There are many, many environmental challenges, such as floods, heat waves, and also smog is a problem in Pakistan. Huzaifa, what would you say, what has been the governance policy so far to address these challenges?
Yeah, of course. So if we look at Pakistan holistically, just before this podcast, I was reading through Pakistan's plan for its NDCs, which it submitted a couple of years ago to the UNFCCC. And so in that, Pakistan set an ambitious goal. They said it's a conditional target, but the goal was to reduce 50% of its projected emissions by 2030. So now if you read further ahead into it, the tricky part comes later, where the government says that Pakistan intends to fund roughly 15% of that from the country's own resources. And then 35% is subject to provision of international finance. And so these figures were just for the energy transition. And so that tells you that Pakistan does have these intentions of reducing its emissions and of tackling climate change, but then a huge part of that is reliant on international capital, which might not necessarily be available to the extent that Pakistan requires. And if we look specifically at Pakistan's energy mix, for example, so at the moment it's heavily reliant on fossil fuels. And so roughly 30% of energy comes from natural gas, 20% from oil, and 15% from coal. And at the same time, if you look at the import-export ratio of this, so 36% of energy comes from imports. And so this makes Pakistan highly vulnerable to changes in global energy markets. And we saw this during the war in Ukraine, for example, where the LNG prices rose drastically in international markets. And a lot of contractors who had agreed to provide Pakistan with LNG stopped supplying LNG. And so Pakistan could no longer afford the spot prices of the market. And that really disrupted the industrial and manufacturing processes in Pakistan. So the government does recognize this. And so, for example, in 2019, the government launched its alternative and renewable energy policy. So within that policy, the government is aiming to have at least 20% of its renewable energy generation by 2025 and at least 30% by 2030. There was also an interesting scheme launched by the State Bank of Pakistan back in 2009 called the Financing of Power Plants Using Renewable Energy Scheme. And so what that does is offer concessional financing at a rate of about 6% per annum for renewable energy projects. So the SPP would partner with different commercial banks or development finance institutions and give them the loans at a nominal 2% interest rate. And then those partners would then give them to consumers at 6%. And so this would foster the development of renewable energy projects, but also minimize the risks for both the banks and the people taking out the loans. At the same time, while there's been a focus in Pakistan on launching new renewable energy projects, I think a lot of focus also needs to be placed on energy efficiency and grid upgrade, and also focusing on the power loss that happens in the transmission through the lines. So that's an example of the energy sector, for example, in Pakistan, in terms of how the government is thinking about climate change.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for sharing this with us. And to go a bit back to the challenges like floods and heat waves and the adaptation strategies, what would you say what are the most successful adaptation strategies in Pakistan? Or are there any successful adaptation strategies? How is the country tackling these challenges?
Yeah, so I think the conversation in Pakistan changed noticeably after the 2022 floods, because that is when globally people were talking a lot about climate change as well, and people were able to link the floods with climate change. And so it's also become more of a priority for the government now. And so in a lot of the efforts after the floods to rehabilitate and reconstruct, the government has really been focusing on adaptation. So in rebuilding those regions and the infrastructure in those regions, the government is thinking a lot about the floods that might come in future years. And so what kind of adaptation and resilience measures they can implement in those reconstruction efforts that would help with future natural disasters. The other thing that has been a focus now is investing in early disaster systems. And I think that's very much key, because when we think about a climate risk, it's about not just about the hazard occurring, but also about the exposure and the vulnerability of the population. And so the vulnerability drastically increases when you don't have early warning systems. And we saw that, for example, in Libya last year, where a very high death toll occurred because there weren't just any early warning systems after the rains and the floods there. And so Pakistan is also thinking about investing in early warning systems in such disasters.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. And what would you say, how is the awareness of people in Pakistan regarding climate change and the need for adaptation? Is there a difference, as in Colombia, between people living in rural areas and urban areas, or is the whole country and the whole population very aware of the risks and challenges that climate change brings with it?
Yeah, of course. That's a good question. So if we think about Pakistan, I'd say that even if the people do not have the exact terminologies to describe what they're facing as climate change, I do think just because of the nature of, for example, the heat waves or of the challenges of water scarcity, people are very much aware of these challenges because they impact their day-to-day lives. And so they might not have the exact words for these challenges, but they are adapting to these challenges in whatever ways they can. And of course, there are limits to adaptation, but people do whatever they have in their power. So for example, I've noticed an increasing trend in recent years that for families who can afford this, they are now installing smart meters in their homes. And what that does is, alongside those smart meters, they install solar panels. And so in the summer months, when there's electricity outages and when there are heat waves, when they need to adapt to climate change, basically, that allows them air conditioning at a much lower cost than the government provided electricity. And of course, they can sell back that excess electricity back onto the government grid. And so that's one example of how people are adapting to climate change.
Okay, great. Now that we have talked a lot about challenges and importance of adaptation and resilience regarding climate change, I want to ask you all one other question that is a bit more positive, or should be more positive. So the question is, what recent news stories from your countries has made you hopeful in terms of climate change and adapting to climate change? And I would like to start with Valentina. Would you like to share your thoughts about that with us?
Yes, absolutely. I think, as you said, it's important to see the positive side as well, because when you are lacking climate, it's all very uncertain and it gets risky and scary. So I think it's a really good question. I cannot think of a particular news, like a specific one, but I think one of the things that gives me hope about the transition in Colombia is that there is a big push and they are building solid bases for green finance, which I think is a key pillar for us to be able to adapt to climate change and mitigate our emissions. So Colombia's last government concluded or finalized the green taxonomy and also the green bond framework. So that will enable some capital to flow into Colombia to finance lots of projects, because there is lots of potential for us to do. But the lack of funding, I think, is a big thing that's stopping us. So I think it's really important that we have that. And also, one important thing is that there is a carbon tax in Colombia, and they're planning to gradually increase it in terms of like its cost and also expanding the sectors that it covers. So I think this is a really positive thing. And I think in general, not only in Colombia, but in Latin America, there is a lot of projects that can be done, and there is lots of potential. We just need the capital to start coming towards ours.
Okay, great. That sounds like a good outlook for Colombia and Latin America. Now let's listen to Pratyusha. What would you say? What news from India make you feel positive or hopeful regarding climate change and the adaptation?
So for me, a recent story highlights the incredible work being done on the ground to combat climate change. So just for context, the Padma Shri Awards are one of India's highest civilian honors. And this year, two environmental activists were recognized for their outstanding efforts in planting trees and millions of trees. And now I think planting trees might seem like a simple act, but we do know that trees act as natural carbon sinks, absorbing CO2 from the atmosphere. And I think by inspiring their communities to plant vast number of trees, these individuals are directly contributing to reducing India's carbon footprint. For me, what makes this story truly inspiring is the national recognition that they received. I think these awards, the Padma Shri Awards, put a spotlight on their work, elevating the importance of environmental efforts and inspiring others across the country. And I feel that their hard work not only contributes to the environment, but also encourages others to get involved. For me, this is just one example, and I'm sure there are many more like this across the country, but it is inspiring to see the momentum building across the country on climate action.
Okay, great. So another positive outlook for India. And now, last but not least, Huzaifa, would you like to end with your thoughts on Pakistan and your outlook or positive news?
Yeah, of course. So I do have positive news about Pakistan. And I'd like to share two initiatives in recent years that have been really great to see. And so the first one is just about a week old. So it's very recent. And so Pakistan got its first ever climate fund approved by the Green Climate Fund. And so, as we've discussed, Pakistan's economy is highly dependent on agriculture. And so with climate change, we are seeing diminishing yields and crop losses. And this poses significant challenges for the smallholder farmers who make up about 90% of the agricultural workforce. So most of these workers are people who have small plots of land, and they don't have resources to adapt to climate risks. And so this climate fund that's being launched in Pakistan would be run by Acumen. And so this fund aims to establish about a USD 80 million adaptation-focused investment fund. And we know that adaptation is a key challenge in terms of financing. And so it's really great to see a fund being established to tackle specifically adaptation. And so this would provide patient capital to different agribusinesses. And the goal would be to improve the climate resilience of these farmers by providing them with different solutions to this end. And then the second news that's been really great to see is around the mangrove restoration in Pakistan. And so if we look at the last 3 to 4 decades, globally, we've seen that there's been a decline in mangroves on coastal areas. But if you look at Pakistan specifically, between the 1980s and now, there's been a surprising threefold increase in the mangroves. And so most recently, there was a project launched in Pakistan called the Delta Blue Carbon Project. And this is a project that is in collaboration with the government of Sindh, which is a provincial government in Pakistan. And it's the world's largest mangrove restoration project. And so this focuses on an area of roughly 350,000 hectares. And so with mangroves, we see that they're not just excellent natural carbon sinks, but they also increase the resilience of coastal communities from sea level rises. So it's a dual benefit solution. And so with this project, what Delta Blue Carbon is hoping to do is rehabilitate those degraded mangrove forests and ensure that they're managed by local communities so that they also see the economic benefits of these projects. And over the lifetime of these projects, they're estimated to sequester roughly 142 megatons of carbon. And so in 2022, we saw that the first tranche of these carbon credits was sold on international markets. Microsoft was one of the companies that purchased these offsets. And so the future of this mangroves project looks quite bright.
Okay, great. So we had three different perspectives on three countries and all with positive outlooks for the future. That was very, very interesting. Thank you all for your insights. I think I've learned a lot today about the three countries and adaptation strategies and challenges that these countries have regarding climate change. So thank you all for your time and for your insights. To everyone listening, I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Valentina, Pratyusha and Josefa. If you'd like to hear more insights, don't forget to subscribe to the Imperial Business Podcast. And of course, there are three other episodes of the Around the World episode coming, so you can look forward to them. If you have any suggestions or know the perfect guest for us to interview, please drop us a message at podcast.greenminds@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening and see you soon.